It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Still Thursday. It's March the 26th, 2015. Primetime Sports on your radio. This is the final hour for today. Yours truly, Bob McCowan. That is Stephen Brunt. A little later, Colby Armstrong will join us in studio with the NHL on Sportsnet. So some hockey talk. But we just spent some time with Grievous Vasquez in studio, not only plugging his shoes, but also talking a little bit about this team. And we talked a little bit about coaching and offense and the insistence on being better defensively. And I get all that kind of stuff. But I must say, I'm of the camp that, you know, find out what your team can do best and then do that. This team had great success at the beginning of the year playing lights out offense. The defense wasn't great, but they were winning a lot of basketball games. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you try and be something you aren't, it can get in the way. Now, I'm a big Coach Casey fan, but he has harped on defense all year long. And I get it. I know you can't win a championship just playing offense. Who's the last team to win a championship just playing offense? I mean, the Denver Nuggets were, like, ridiculous one year. I don't remember if they won
a
championship.
They didn't win, though. No, I don't think they won a championship.
They won, like, they scored, like, a ridiculous number of points. But I don't think anybody in this organization thinks this team really is capable of winning a championship anyway.
Not right now.
Not right now. It's still a work in progress. So how do you balance those two things? Here's the general manager and president of basketball operations for the Toronto Raptors. Here's our friend Masai Ujiri. How are you?
Bob, how are you, man? See, what's going on?
We're just kicking ass, taking names. So you look at this thing from a completely different perspective than Casey does. He is the head coach. He has different responsibilities. He's interested in what happens tonight and maybe a little less tomorrow night. Your vision has to be a lot longer term. As you look at this team, would there have been any benefit? And I know this is hindsight, but would there have been any benefit in saying, all right, if you guys can win playing offense, keep doing what you're doing? Do you think that could have made any kind of a difference? Because the last couple of months have been, you know, not as good for your team.
Yeah, I think it can, Bob. It depends on the way you look at it. But at the end of the day, if you are trying to win now, you know, like you're trying to make an impression now, and you say, hey, your team is going to win now. I think, yes, you can look at it that way and you say, okay, we go all out. But honestly, Bob, let's look at ourselves and face reality. We're a building team, we're a growing team, we're a learning team, and teams are going to go through these hard times, this tough times, and we haven't played well. We haven't played well defensively. I think offense, we have players that are capable, will always be good, but I think we just have to find something that will take us through defensively, you know, and then continue to grow. But hey, we're getting punched in the face and we're getting beaten doesn't mean, you know, it's the end of the world. That's sports. That's competitive sports, and we have to go out there and at the end of the day play. So if you are building long term, I think, Bob, it's hard to say, okay, just go play offense. You know, it's very hard to do that, because you can continue to do that, and in the end, you're going to come and face the same question: is how are you, what are your defensive abilities? What's your defensive identity? And that's what we have to, build for the future.
Which is the real team, Masai? Is the real team the team at the beginning of the season, or is the real team the team we're seeing right now?
I think the real team is the team you saw in the beginning of the season, and we were still not a great defensive team. But as Grievous said, we had an identity. You know, like when you lose a little bit, you know, like it takes a while. You know, if you remember, we went through it for a little bit there in January, just right after the West Coast trip, and then all of a sudden you win 1-2, San Antonio, Clippers. Atlanta, we beat 4 or 5 teams in a row. We won 10 out of 12. So it's quick to swing like that. This one has stayed a little bit long, you know, like we're in and out of injuries with Kyle. It stayed a little bit longer, but I think gearing up for the playoffs, you know, like everybody's kind of going to get back tuned in again, try and get back some confidence there on the defensive side of the ball. So, Bob, are we as good as, you know, like 25-7 or whatever it was? Maybe not. Are we as bad as losing 10 out of 12 or 10 out of, I can't remember, I don't know what the number is, you know, like
something like that.
So, yeah, so I know there's huge expectations, but you know what? That's what comes with sports, man. That's why we're in this business. We're in this business to compete. We're in this business to go and play and go to win, and we want to win. So, for me, do away with the excuses and go play. You get punched in the face, stand up and go back again. You know, like, and you're not going to win all the time in sports, but you're going to go out there and compete and try to.
Masai, will Kyle Lowry be 100% healthy at any point this season?
Yes, he will. I trust that he will. I think Kyle is going back to do the work. The blow in the back was unlucky. It happens, you know, like, listen, these injuries happen to good teams. You know, like we talk about Chicago, they've played without a couple of their guys, and they withstood, you know, like the blows that were coming at them. They lost a lot and just persevered and continued. They didn't have Butler. They don't have Rose, you know, like, so when we don't have our all-star for a few games here, you know, we have to go there and fight. You know, everybody sometimes complains about playing time. They complain, oh, now is go play now. Go play. You know, this is the time to go play.
But as somebody who's, and I mentioned this earlier, has had back issues during the course of my life, here's what I understand. You know, if you have to go down with some kind of injury, the last one I want to see from my athletes is a back injury, because you never know. You almost can never fix it, and you never know when it will recur, except you're pretty sure it's going to recur. And that's, I think, the concern that everybody has to have about Lowry.
Yes, it's always a concern, you know, like it's always the same thing we said when DeMar had that, you know, like a groin injury. Well, it's the groin and it's jumping, and it's the same thing with any injury, honestly, Bob. I understand the back and I understand your point. I had a back issue too when I was cherry picking in Europe, but it's still, it's an injury. We have to attack it like as normal, and you have to hope for the best. You can't continue worrying, and he's our all star, and it is a concern for us. But we have the best medical staff. We believe that Kyle Lowry is strong enough and will persevere this, and we'll get back on track.
How are you going to manage him and manage the injury over those last 10 games? I assume he is itching to get back out and play, but you have to think about you have to think about getting him as close to 100% health as you can before the playoffs. How are you going to do that?
Yes, it's rest. I think, you know, we're not going to force him back at all. I think there's no desperation here. We'll try and grind those games we have next, you know, like, and get Kyle the necessary rest that Kyle needs, and then when he's able to play at his own time, we'll definitely try and figure that out.
It would appear that a Washington matchup is the most likely at this point in time. It's not, we don't know that that's going to happen, but that seems the most likely scenario. So preview that potential series for us. What is it about Washington that concerns you? What is it about Washington that makes you think, assuming you do, that your team can beat them?
Yeah, honestly, Bob, I don't want to go there because, you know, like, we don't know what it is. There's still so many games to go. You know, like, it could be them. It could be Milwaukee. You never know. Like Washington could get on a roll here, and it could be a 4-5 matchup with Chicago if both of us, you know, fall and Washington all of a sudden goes on an unbelievable roll and gets third position, you know. Like, so I hate to always, you know, like even talking about the playoffs, I didn't even know, you know, last night my wife comes down from upstairs and gives me a hug after an hour after the game, and I was wondering what the hell is going on, and apparently we clinched a playoff spot, you know, like she saw that, you know. So for me, it's not important now. You know, like let's get ready as a team. You know, like Washington will be Washington in the playoffs. Honestly, I've been in this situation, Bob, where you know, saying, okay, that team, this team, I've been in. The one you want, they come and they kick your ass. You know, like, so.
I understand.
Let's go out there and prepare and just be ready for anything that comes our way. And it's the playoffs. Everybody just takes it to another level. It's the best time of the year. It's the time you're going to compete and play and fight, you know. So we're in there. We're hoping we get in there with a good place. And whoever the opponent is, you know, like, we want to be ready to face them.
How are you going to, at the end of this year, Masai, how are you going to, you know, measuring the progress of this team? If you had, the fan base would have said after last year, well, we're going to win a playoff series. That's going to be the next step. We're going to win a playoff series next year. Earlier in the season, they might have been dreaming bigger than that. But when it's all is said and done at the end of the playoffs, how are you going to measure whether this team has progressed?
I think you look at it collectively as a team. You look at it, obviously you're going to look at results. That's natural with how we look at evaluate progress with a team. We'll look at players individually. We'll look at everything, you know, like we'll look at our style of play, everything. I think it's going to be real easy. You can tell even in the first round, I don't want a first-round exit. You want to progress as much as you can. But even in that, I think you're going to be able to measure and evaluate your team and see, you know, some of the things that you're going to be able to fix. We're in a good position, you know, like we've got good players, young talent, and they're growing. I think another point, Bob and Steve, when you look at this thing, you know, like it's not like last year was the first time DeMar has maybe even had a winning record in Toronto, and maybe even the first year in the playoffs, I know for sure. But I know for sure Jonas was the first time in the playoffs. Terrence was the first time. Maybe James Johnson, he'll be the first time. Memphis, I don't know last year if he played a bit. But all these players, even Kyle Lowry, okay, he won. Maybe he played in the playoffs 1 year or a couple, 1 year in Houston. Amir Johnson was first time last year. We haven't won anything, you know, like we haven't done anything yet. Yeah, there was a hoopla of, okay, yeah, we went to the playoffs. We haven't done anything. So these guys are actually young players learning to win, you know, like, so it's not like we're putting players here that have been in the playoffs for the last 6 years and, oh, we haven't gone to, we're trying to win a playoff round. We're learning to win, and we're going to win. And these guys, they're determined. I know they are fighting through it. I know Coach Casey is fighting through it, and we'll figure out a way.
I guess that's kind of good. So that the importance of winning the first round player. You're in the playoffs now officially as of last night, so we'll talk about it as reality. The importance of winning. You're, you know, talking about a winning culture and learning how to win playoff series. You know, so whatever the long view is in terms of the evolution of this team towards a championship, winning that series is important in terms of creating that culture, is what you're saying, right?
Yes. I think it's very important for us. To win a playoff series, I think, is one of the most difficult things to do. You know, like it's grind. Every team is studying your team, same team every day for 7 games, maybe it's 6, sometimes maybe it's 5. But it's a big time grind, you know, and it's a big time challenge. They know every move, everything you are going to do, and you have to get creative. You have to fight every possession. And real men come out then, you know, like, and we'll know, you know, like, I think the evaluation will be right there and we'll see it with our team.
With Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball operations and general manager of the Toronto Raptors, one of the things that this team has done, and I'm interested in whether it was deliberate, discussed, projected at the beginning of the season, or whether it's just evolved this way, has been the limitation of the number of minutes your starters play and your key players play. Now, you have literally a second five that you can put in there. I understand they don't always play a lot of minutes together, but they play a substantial number of minutes. It means that at the end of the season, theoretically, your starting five is not overworked. Lowry, with the injury, may be a bit of an exception there, but I wonder whether you think Casey or the organization projects significantly more minutes for your starters once you get to the postseason, or are you reluctant to break up the pattern you've already created?
Oh, no, by far, Bob, this is done super intentionally, you know, like I can really tell you that, you know, like there's no coincidence that you try to give those guys as much rest, and you try and build a bench, you know, like that at least guys that can come in and play. We know DeMar, we know Kyle, those guys are eventually they're going to play heavy minutes, you know, like, and now this is the time. Once you're going into the playoffs, you want to create some kind of rhythm within the team. I'm sure Coach Casey will have that mapped out. But those guys, their minutes are not going to stay down the way I see it. I see it, you know, like going up a little bit. And this is why they've kind of been saved, is for this time of the year.
Well, and you would know yourself. I mean, when Vince Carter was here, it was not unusual for him to play 40 minutes. Even Boogie Williams would play 40 minutes a lot of the time. You know, 40 was sort of a number. Like Stockton and Malone in Utah would play 42 to 44 minutes almost every night. You don't see that as much in the NBA anymore.
Yes, it's a grind now. I think, with what the players go through preseason, the whole year, off season, all those type of workouts, you know, we have to be careful on how with all the injuries still happening. I think we have to be careful how we put these players out there, and sometimes even try and save them a little bit. And that's kind of what we've tried to do. Don't get me wrong, you know, like it pisses off Kyle, it pisses off DeMar, you know, like these guys are competitive guys, you know, like it's not the easiest thing for coach to do, you know, like we're here trying to, you know, like help them, manage them and all that. They're just competitive guys, and but this is the time you save them for.
The NCAA tournament, I don't have to remind you, is back on tonight.
That's right.
I assume is the focus of your attention other than watching your own team play. Is that your primary objective right now, is essentially scouting, looking at possible draft choices?
I'm calling you from Cleveland. I just flew to Cleveland.
There you go.
Got here about an hour ago, and watch those two games here. Go watch two games in Houston tomorrow, and then one game in LA on Saturday, and then back home on Sunday. It's 100% where our focus is now. You get to see players play in intense moments, you know. And
right.
We put all our resources into this, and quite a few prospects, you know, like it's a good time to watch basketball for sure.
I know you can't talk about specifics and I wouldn't ask you about it, but in a general sense, in this new age, well, I guess it's not that new anymore. I'm just an old guy who remembers when players used to actually play 4 years of college basketball, you know, where the star players, it's one and done almost invariably. How do you evaluate the crop this year in a general sense, you know, as you prepare for a draft in a few months from now?
I never go into a draft, honestly, Bob, looking at it as a bad draft, you know, like it's a time where the NBA rules has permitted us to look for players at this time, and it's almost the only, it's one of the only ways where you can find players. So we get our guys geared up. You know, we have a couple guys heading to Europe today. I'm on the road with Jeff Wildman. For me, you treat it full on. Even in bad drafts, you find good players. You know, like, and I think this one is okay. You know, like this one is I think we can say it's a good draft, and we're going to attack it the best possible way we can. Like, scouting is my background. This is how I got into the league. So
we know.
I'm passionate about it, and so is our staff. So we look at it in every possible way that we can.
Remind us, do you have you have picks in both the first and second rounds?
We have in the first and not in the second.
How does that influence your decision in your first round, or does it at all? The fact that you, at this point, barring some kind of move, only have the one selection.
You know, you attack it, and you want to get the best player possible. I think one of the things in the way we project that too is next year we almost projected the way we brought in Bruno, and we knew this year was going to be like a wash year, so. We wanted to get him stronger. We knew where he was as a basketball player. So next year is Bruno's first year in our opinion. We just thought it was something that we couldn't pass over last year. So this year we're going to figure out what the need is going to be as we go along here and figure out the best talent that we can get to come and. To come and be a part of the Toronto Raptors.
Now, meanwhile, is anybody going to give Kentucky a game?
Oh, they're pretty good now.
Yeah, I think so.
I hate the tournament, Bob. You know, like it's the NBA. When you get beat, you know, like you say, you know what, you got beat. Yeah, 7 games or 5 games, or how many games you got beat? But I'm telling you, one day. You, I get so nervous watching them play. You know, like just because you know you. They're good. They're so good, you know, like, but you never know what can happen. Just, you know, one time, one team just gets hot, stays with them till, you know, like the middle of the second half. And then all of a sudden, there's always the crowd there that starts going for the underdogs, you know, like in the tournament. So I get nervous, but I will say they're pretty good.
Well, there's lots of Cinderella stories to talk about. Michigan State, North Carolina mm-hmm. State. Isn't Wichita still in it?
Wichita State's playing Notre Dame tonight.
Yeah. I mean, even Notre Dame is, you know, I mean, they're a good basketball team, but they weren't, you know, a top seed. So there's lots of Cinderellas in this tournament, Masai.
Yes, no, there is. There is. And it's going to continue. That's just that's the nature and the history of the tournament is that there will be there's probably going to be one Cinderella in the Final Four, and who will it be? You know, that's why we watch it, and that's why it's so gripping.
Enjoy your time in Cleveland and then in Houston, and thanks a lot for taking a few minutes for us. We always appreciate it. You know that.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me, and thanks, Steve. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball ops and general manager of the Toronto Raptors, saying, you know, what you would expect a general manager to say when his team isn't playing very well.
But it was interesting, you know, that whole idea of if they lose in the first round, okay, and again, they're in now, it's official, so they're in the playoffs. If the fan base is going to be brokenhearted.
100%.
Right? So if they lost to Washington, lose to a Milwaukee, lose to whoever they get matched up there, people are going to be, they're going to say, oh, man, but they, you know, it started so great. It was unbelievable. We, you know, and here we are back where we were a year ago. You know, along the big curve here, they could still be progressing and not actually get anywhere further in the postseason. But, you know, listen to him talk about, you know, you have to learn how to win a playoff series. It's a, you know, you got a bunch of guys who've never been in the playoffs until last year. You know, how hard it is in the NBA, well, like a lot of sports, but, you know, it's very dramatic in the NBA that the game changes. You know, the game changes in the postseason. It's a different game. You have to learn how to win those games. You have to learn how to beat the same team in a 7-game series. You know, I don't think any of us think they're going to go beyond one round here. I think that idea of that you got to win this first round series, that there's a lot of emphasis on being able to win that series just for the kind of maturation of the guys they have.
Well, look, I think everybody in the organization feels exactly the same way you and I do and the fans do, that that's the bar. The bar was set at the beginning of the year. you made mention of the fact that the bar might have been higher than that, mm-hmm. and I think it was for a lot
for
of
a little
fans.
While there. Oh, look where they were in the standings.
They won 24 or 25 of their first 30 games. They were the number one team in the East, and by a comfortable margin, it appeared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start to have, I think all fans can remember the dreaming that they were doing about what is possible with this team.
Yeah, and wait, LeBron James doesn't look like LeBron James. They haven't got their act together in Cleveland. This Atlanta team, well, they're good, but that's got to be a mirage.
Yeah, there wasn't
Derrick Rose is hurt.
Again, Chicago will fall apart.
Yeah, so it kind of looked like, you know, yeah, who knows what the possibility
is. Yeah, I mean, nobody went crazy and started thinking about NBA championship, but you started to think, you know, is there a road here to the final?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about it a whole lot, but I think basketball fans were talking about it plenty in those first, you know, 2 months. How interesting would this season be if they started out 8 games below 500, which is what they are since that run, and then reversed it, and yeah. we're now on a 25 of 30 streak. I think the aspirations would be a lot higher. I think there's a lot of nervous people out there.
I think there are, too. Now, the one thing that would have been turned around by then is, of course, Cleveland, you know, figured things out, and LeBron started to look like LeBron, and, you know, you're starting to kind of concede the East to one team, you know, probably to them, right? Most people would, maybe Atlanta. But so that, I guess that has kind of, so even if they were hot, right, you know, you'd say, well, yeah, they're hot, but they're not going to
get by. But they still
got to
get past
there. They're not going to get by, right?
Right.
But I think, yeah, I think this is going to be a tough one. You know, they got 10 games to kind of get, to start to look like that team again, at least. And I think if they did, you know, if they go into a first round and lose to Washington, let's say that's the matchup, it's going to be a very tough one to swallow.
I got to tell you something else. I think that's probably the worst thing that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Not to lose to Chicago, who are basically a veteran team.
Yeah, and then
not to lose to Atlanta, who's been the best team in the East all year, one of the best in the NBA. Not to lose to Cleveland, because we know it's LeBron and company. But if you lose to Washington,
we're sort of like you.
They're sort of like you. They're young. They're coming.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a lot of experience. They don't have playoff experience. But they're a good young team that may have a future. You lose to them, and all of a sudden, you're not in that A class. Are you even in the B class? That's the part that's going to be challenging. Some hockey talk when we come back. Colby Armstrong joins us in studio. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. Coming up to 24 before the hour, Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks for this Thursday, the 26th of March. McCowan, Brunt. And here's Colby Armstrong making his second appearance.
Second, yep.
In studio. Nice to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Most people don't get to
good
the
to be
second
back.
One, Colby. I just got to tell you. So
you've already, yeah, well, I know a guy behind the scenes that kind of hooks me up. So I don't know. If,
that
I think
helps.
I kind of weasel under Bob a little bit. And then once I'm here, he can't say no.
Oh, yeah?
No, he can say no.
Yeah.
We were talking off air, and Scotty Bowman was on with us earlier, and I guess you had a chance to hear it. And it's interesting
great.
To hear a former NHL player and enjoy what Scotty has to say so much.
I thought it was great. I wish it would have been longer. I was saying, I wish we had more time for him. But just the point, just the way he thinks, it was really cool to hear his thought process, how you know, involved, how big of a thinker he really is about how to fix the game or how to make it better, or, you know, your discussion was lack of scoring. It's pretty crazy how down it is. I know I talked to Crosby this year, and he was like, what's up with the scoring this year? Like, no one can score, when he was taking a little heat for not producing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's down all around. It's not just him. It's everybody.
Well, I made mention earlier, and we've documented this. The NHL scoring champion this year will score less than 90 points. It's the first time since Stan Mikita in 66-67.
Yeah. This is wild.
It's been under 90 points. And, I mean, the point that sort of irks me is, because we started on this last week when the NHL general managers met, I'm happy that they talked about overtime. I'm happy that we're going to have fewer shootouts, whether they go 3-on-3, 4-on-4. Whatever they do, at least they talked about it. But how in this day and age in the National Hockey League can 30
mm-hmm.
general managers get together and not talk about offenses down? And what are we going to do about it? Are you going to? Yeah. Are you? you know, we've had debates about the size of the goaltender equipment. We've had debates, and they've done negligible. We've had debates about the size of the nets. Scotty talked about moving the blue line.
Everybody's, I like that one.
It's everybody's got to do. I can't even quantify what it would look like, but I trust Scotty Bowman.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why aren't we commissioning a blue ribbon panel?
No, let's not do that. No more of those.
But just to deal with the subject.
Okay.
Just to deal with the subject. Put the National Football League this year, like every year, will have their, and they're in the process of doing it now, I think, their rules committee gets together every summer. Mm-hmm. They always change a bunch of rules. What they did this year is they sent out inquiries to all the general managers of every team and said, come up with a rule change. And one of the wacky ones that came out was, if you decide to go for a 2-point convert, you should still be able to kick an extra point, but kick it from the 50-yard line. So you have a potential of a 9-point
million-dollar shootout.
Hmm. Well,
kick out.
But yeah. Wait a sec. This is the most successful, by anybody's quantification, this is the most successful league in North America, yeah, for sure. Maybe arguably the world, although soccer people would argue that, if it's really a sport. And they're prepared. You got general managers prepared to make those kinds of changes?
Yeah.
I love that. I love the fact that they're not afraid of change. And if it doesn't work, they go, yeah, okay, we'll change it back.
I that's what I think was the great thing about Scotty Bowman. I think he's, you know, outside the box thinking. I think it's smart. You know, like you said about making the zone a little bit smaller. You know, I played in Sweden last year on quite a bit bigger ice, but the zone is bigger.
You were talking about it, yeah.
You're taught to, you know, stay down in front of the net, take away the middle, so it's like a log jam in the middle. It's hard to generate any shots, any scoring chances coming out of the corner. Only a few guys like Nash and those guys can really come off the wall good. But, yeah, a lot of things come from the point with point shots, and then you're blocking shots like a maniac, and that's what I went through in Sweden. I thought I was going to go over there and dangle, and it was the most defensive league I've ever played in. I believe that I was going to dangle, Bob.
I wonder, you know, there have been various crises of, you know, the Brett Hull declaring that the game sucked once upon a time and getting the commissioner mad. We've had the whole trap era, and how are we going to get out of that? There have been, you know, different times when kind of people thought aesthetically the hockey was going to hell in a handbasket. I'm not sure what that's what people think now. Like, scoring is down, but we're not in kind of a crisis of style here, are we, or anything? Like, we may be. I think we're
put
in an era.
Put me on that list.
You think so?
I'm the only one who thinks that, I think.
I think we're in an era of great goaltending.
Yeah, I think.
For one thing.
Well, you're in the era of enormous goaltenders. It's starting to look like the National Lacrosse League.
Yeah, we're a little bit of an era of, like, a little bit, I feel weird saying this, a little bit of a dumber player, really. I think, you know, we got guys with all this speed, and we just, you know, I saw an interview earlier, it was probably last year with Jagr. You know, guys just skate up and down and bang into the wall, bang into the other wall and change. You know, there's just no, you know, it's speed and shooting the puck.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you don't see those guys doing all those turns, maybe the Sedins, but rarely do you see guys with, like, you know, the old turn back, bump back play and, you know, weaving through and, you know, the smarts and the chess match of a play, setting up a goal, you know, four or five plays later by making these certain plays. It's all like spin, fire, shoot, goalie kicks it out, breakout the other way, fast through the other side, slap shot, rim around the board, skate fast. It's just like continuous skating and flying around. But
yeah, we'll see, because that's it though, and I think that you've hit on it there. You know that the speed is still in the game.
Right? Yeah,
and
it's very fast, exciting game,
you know,
for sure.
Super short shifts, everybody's going 100 miles an hour all the time, but you know maybe what you lack is some of the kind of the artistry of it, right?
I mean that's what I see. That's what I could feel, especially, you know, my last few years in the league, you know, GMs and coaches, you know, we'd like to see you really, you know, take the puck wide and fire it from the corner at the net or get pucks on net or drive wide. And, you know, my thinking, and maybe that's why I'm not playing anymore, but it's like, I thought that was dumb. I thought that was like a giveaway. Why, if I can't beat a guy wide, wouldn't I pull up and wait for help and, you know, get a couple cycles going and try to get, you know, set up a play at the net or a quality scoring chance instead of me coming down with my limp-wristed wrist shot and firing a giveaway on the net for a kick pass to his D partner, and it's gone the other way. The game's changed that way. Definitely, yeah. Changed with the speed and going that way. But I thought, yeah, Scotty Bowman, man, he brought up some great points.
The speed is valid. I mean, the game has never been quicker. The athletes have never been better. And maybe it's just the size of goaltenders. We talked to Scotty about Ken Dryden. Ken Dryden was the biggest goaltender in the NHL when he played. for the Montreal Canadiens. Yeah. He was 6'4", and he looked enormous. And we can all remember those shots of Dryden leaning on the top of his stick. It was like the stick was too short for him, and it was the longest stick that any goaltender played with.
But he looked like a rail.
He was a rail. I mean,
but he just his equipment and everything. Like it's just like he was just
a
lanky
guy.
I feel
like I could have come down the right side and beat him with a shot.
I know. I always think that when I watch all those shows. Like, yeah, I can do that.
I could have scored 50 against those guys. There's net to shoot.
It's not just equipment, but I think they're better. I think the goaltenders go back and watch games from the 70s.
All of that, technically, all of that is true.
I think all of that is valid.
No
and
position
true.
In hockey has evolved more. There's no question.
I agree. But then if you want to keep up with the evolution of goaltending, then you better address it.
Make the net bigger.
Well, if that's what it takes. I'm not a big proponent in it. I would like to find another way.
Yeah.
The problem you have, be interested if you agree, coaches don't coach offense. Coaches coach defense.
I heard you say that before, too. That's true.
You know, as a golfer, one of my favorite phrases is, you can teach almost anything in the game of golf, but you can't teach touch.
Yeah.
You can't.
As an example of that, too, for your point, we learn our systems. What's your systems? Defensive play. That's all it is. That's all it is your defensive play. Your first line and your fourth line on a team play exactly the same way, which is pretty crazy. We're taught to play the same way. So I'm playing the same way as Malkin and Crosby play the exact same system. When these guys are, you know, through the roof better than everyone else on the team, they should, you know, it's just, that's the way it's taught. It's just a defense. So if you've got it offensively, you've got it. If you don't, you're the exact same. And that's part of being a team, but at the same time, offensively, these guys are so much better. It should be, you know.
Well, that's why some guys, you mentioned Jágr. You know, I was watching him play with the Devils the other night, he stands out, you know. He looks like a different kind of hockey player now because, you know, it's the slower, older version of him. Yeah. But you can see the wheels turning in his head and the way he puts himself in positions. You know, he's
that other guys don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not, you know, he's playing with Florida, but you know what? You don't see that, you know, with Gretzky, you know, every shift he took, you kind of saw the wheels turning with Gretzky.
Yeah.
And you see that with Jágr, but I'm not sure how many guys I see that with anymore.
Oh, man, it's bad out of hell hockey. You just go hard and
straight lines
as fast as you can. I think that was part of, like, you know, when have we seen Sidney Crosby have, like, jumping through the air, splitting the D, ripping a diving backhand shot into the net? You know, that's speed behind the puck, getting the puck in the neutral zone, but you know, the puck's just now, it's just boom, 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 get it in and skate.
But isn't that what we, as fans, and now
I want to see Sidney Crosby do a diving backhand goal. That's
what
the greatest thing.
What is wrong with Sidney Crosby getting 150 points?
Yeah, let him get it.
Or somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we've got a very extraordinarily talented young player coming who's going to be the number one draft choice, who scored like a ridiculous number of points in junior hockey. And I think it's very close to what Sidney scored.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty significant. He's going to walk into a game where a lot of the things that he's been doing are going to be taken away by the style and the system of the game. And the expectation that this kid can come in and get 120 points, I don't think so. I think he'll be really good.
Yeah.
How, like, I remember Crosby
getting 103 or 102 points his rookie season. I think that's going to be tough to do.
Oh, I think it's going to be really tough.
I think it's going to be so hard. As skilled and as gifted as he is, just the way the game is now, everyone can skate fast. Everyone is checking. Everyone is building their defense, like Scotty Bowman said, and everyone has goaltending. It's a whole nother league and a whole nother game.
How many Canadian teams do you think are going to make the playoffs?
As of last night, the way I did the Flames game last night, I can't see them hanging on just by
way
they played. I thought they had a tough start. Yeah, they salvaged a point, but LA's been heating up. It's going to be a race to the wire, but.
Well, they heated up, then they cooled right off.
The one team
they come on again.
I can't wrap my head around is Vancouver. Like, to watch them, I'm just really not that impressed about them, but they just keep hanging in there, too. They keep winning games. I mean, they're only 2 points ahead of LA. LA's got a game in hand on them, but. It's a heck of a race over there.
You think Calgary's the odd team out there?
Out of the Canadian teams, yeah. I think Vancouver.
Do you like Winnipeg's chance?
I do. I love Winnipeg. I like them. I think if they can get in the playoffs, they're ready to go. They're big.
Oh, you think they can beat some teams?
I think they can beat some teams.
Really?
Yeah. And I think they're going to be the
team. I like them. Again, they're sneaky.
If Calgary doesn't scrape, you know, if they're kind of running on fumes right now too, but Winnipeg is going to be the kind of the happy Cinderella story for people if they get in there.
I can't wait if they get it. Like, Winnipeg will just be rocking.
Yes.
What a building.
Oh, yeah.
Like, rocking.
Now, did you ever play for Paul Maurice?
No, I didn't.
I didn't think so.
No. There are lots of good things about him, though.
I loved him when he was in Toronto.
Every time I missed him or wherever I went.
I really liked him. I had a lot of respect for him when he was
with the
Maple Leafs.
Yeah, lots of guys liked him there, too.
Yeah.
Heard a lot from the training staff and guys that said he was great.
What about the Ottawa Senators? Who'd have thought this? Wow. Is this the best story that you can remember in the NHL?
Awesome.
It's just off the charts.
It's unreal. Like, I think I seen someone referring to Twitter, on Twitter a while ago that they were, you know, a few points back of the Maple Leafs at one point, like not long ago. Like, we're not talking long. And now they're like, you know,
light years
ahead of them in a short amount of time. So it's pretty incredible story. And what was Hamburglar's going for a record here, mm-hmm. the Leem record.
Yeah,
pretty outstanding.
Well, he's only here because they ran out of goaltenders.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like he was lighting it up. Well, no, and we all know guys get hot. And especially goaltenders, they get hot and they get confident.
That's the best.
And when you get confident, you feel like you can stop anything.
Yeah. And your team gets confident, like you're never going to lose. There's no way we can lose.
Well, and I know he's getting a lot of the credit, and he deserves a significant
portion. Might be good for the team.
I think it's great for the team. Yeah. I think the team is playing way better. I think when you put and you would attest to this, you've got a guy like Carey Price as your goaltender.
Yeah.
Your attitude is different every night. You know you got a chance to win. You know you're probably going to win. And if we make a mistake, it's not the end of the world. Carey will stop it.
Absolutely.
It affects you.
It's a heck of a feeling to get ready for a game and you know Price is your goalie. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, or anybody who's playing great, like Hamburglar right now, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
So do they make it?
I think they make it, yeah. I do.
Wow. That'd be a great story. It would be a tremendous story.
I think it's already a great story, whether they make
it or don't make it.
But I mean, I don't know how you don't root for them. And I know that there's a rivalry between Ottawa and Toronto. You experienced it to some extent. Yeah. I don't know how
it wasn't that great actually when I was here.
Yeah, I don't know how real it was.
It's been a while since it was the Battle of Ontario.
Like, I don't know whether Toronto fans hate Ottawa as much as Ottawa fans hate Toronto.
Like, I grew up watching that.
Yeah,
and then I went to Pittsburgh and I played Philly Pittsburgh. That was crazy. A few other teams in that division at the time was crazy. And then when I came to Toronto, I was like, oh, Battle of Ontario, here we go. And it was like, meh, meh.
Yeah. Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of steam.
We tried
left
to,
in
like, create something, but there was nothing.
Yeah, I don't know how much is there.
Yeah, it's not
But
the
if
same.
You're a Toronto Maple Leaf fan and you hate the Ottawa Senators, how can you not be rooting for them?
Yeah, it's a great story. It is unbelievable. I love that story about the Hamburglar, too. You know, guy comes out of nowhere, and it's awesome for him.
I hope they allow them to keep throwing hamburgers after the game. I mean, you don't want people throwing stuff on the ice while the play is on. But at the end of the game, the guys are skating off. The crew's going to come on the ice and scrape anyway.
It's pounding.
Are you
with
encouraging
hamburgers?
This behavior, Bob?
Yeah.
Throw them. It's fantastic. Are you kidding?
A bunch of guys working in the arena there are cursing you right
now. Yeah.
Too bad, so sad. Look, they're all on hourly wage. I'm giving them an extra couple of hours of work every night.
That's very generous.
They're making money. You're welcome.
Spirit of generosity.
Colby Armstrong, nice to see you. Come back and see us again.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Our thanks to him and everybody else who joined us on the program tonight, including Masai Ujiri, who was on just a few minutes ago. That'll do it for us. Roundtable tomorrow night, as usual, for Friday. For Stephen Brunt, Bob McCowan, have a nice evening. Good night from Toronto.